Broadcasted live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Bruce, thank you so much for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Yes, thank you very much, Pamela.
I mean, it's one of those we thought, you know, let's celebrate Park Run. It's really the reason we have this feature. We speak to people who are making an impact in our society.
Okay,
and,
great.
And it may seem small, but I mean, you know the challenges this country has. And so it's good for us to talk to people who are making a difference. Let's talk about your decision. I mean, can you remember when you came up with, you know, this town or the city or this country needs something like a park run?
So, Pamela, it's not my idea.
Yes, I know.
Like all great ideas, park run is a South African idea.
Yes.
So it was started in the UK by a South African guy, Paul St. Hewitt,
mm-hmm.
and it became very successful there. And he's an old friend of mine. And I went across to run the London Marathon, and he persuaded me to run a park run the day before.
Yeah.
And once I had seen a park run in the UK, I understood the magic, that it works for everybody, that there are very fast runners in front, but then there are also slower people at the back who walk the whole way. And it was such a magical morning that I said to him, Paul, we have to start it in South Africa. And he said, that's why I asked you to come. And that was April 2011, and we got going. It took us a bit of procrastination, a bit of time to find a suitable park. And so we had our first park run in Delta Park in Johannesburg in November 2011, and 26 people came. And we would have had no idea that as I speak to you now, there's 1.5 million South African registered South African park runners.
And that's, you know, I didn't know the history, but the point I was making was, you know, for you to buy into it and think South Africa needs something like this. What was it about the park run, your experience with your first park run in the UK?
It's because it welcomes everybody. Mm. I think that was the thing. It welcomes everybody. Secondly, of course, it's free.
Mm.
So you don't have to sell it to anyone because it's free.
Yes.
You know, so all you have to do is register, print your little barcode, and come along on a Saturday morning to one of our, we've got more than 200 venues. And it's also a doable distance. You see, it's 5K, which is a distance that most people can finish, you know, even walking slowly. So we have this imaginary character, Tani Labaskakhni, who's at the back, and Tani Labaskakhni is large and not athletic, but she's going to make it, you know. And she makes it, and she comes every Saturday. And even then, even if walking or running 5Ks is not your thing, you can still participate because you can volunteer. And you can volunteer to be a scanner, a timer, a marshal, a car park helper. You know, there's a whole lot of roles that you can play that make you a vital and important part of every park run. And so what I realized is, yes, it is about getting healthier and fitter and all that. That's fantastic. But it's actually much more about community.
Mm.
People cannot wait to see their friends and their loved ones and have a lot of fun on a Saturday morning. That's the key.
I'll give you my sense of what it does in restoring, for instance, a town like Johannesburg, a city like Johannesburg, where many of us for a long time were afraid to go into the streets because, you know, we've become so isolated, we live in our little spaces, and it's tough, and you're afraid to go in the streets because you think crime and all of those things. And for me, this is just one of those things that said, it's okay, we're all in this together, we can be a part of this community, and let's own it, let's own the town, let's own the city, this is our space too. And for me, that's the magic of a park run.
Yeah, so we have grabbed a lot of those spaces back.
Yeah.
If I think of two parks that just spring to mind,
there's
Golden Harvest. The other thing, by the way, I didn't even know that we had parks, some of our parks in Johannesburg. I had no clue.
Yeah, yeah.
But park runners now have discovered them. So Golden Harvest is a great example. It's a lovely park. Now, you can come along, say, as a slow walking woman, and you're not athletic, but you can be absolutely sure you'll be safe there. You will not be on your own. You'll have a great time. You can never be last because we have a person who goes at the back called a tail walker, whose job is to make sure you're not last, but more importantly, is actually kind of like a safety sweeper in case there's somebody who's got into trouble. I'm trying to think. There's another park, Len Ritter Park in Ritterport. It was a dump. It really was. I can say this quite categorically. It was a dump. It was terrible. Litter, grass, you know, waist high. And now the park runners there have taken over. It's a lovely park. The litter's been picked up. It's safe. And people come along on a Saturday morning and they park run.
What is it about running for you, Bruce? Your own journey with running. It's I would call it a love affair. Is it a love affair?
Yeah, for me, you know, as a youngster, I've always loved sport. I love sport. I mean, I'm passionate about our Springboks. I'm passionate about our cricketers, our netball players, everything. I'm passionate. But for me personally, I was absolutely useless. You know, you didn't want to be in your cricket team. I was a very passionate scum half at rugby, but that doesn't mean I was good. You know, but the one thing that I took to immediately was running from a very early age. I loved to run, and so that was probably the key. And then, of course, it couldn't have worked out better for me that we have this incredible race in South Africa called Comrades.
Yeah.
And I just seem to, I seem to have selected my parents directly to be a good Comrades runner. And I'm genetically, well, I was genetically suited to run 90 Ks quite quickly. I absolutely love it. But for me now, parkrun has become my new running home. You know, I'm highly unlikely to run another Comrades. I've run 30. I finished my last one with Zola Budd, which was a huge high. It was a wonderful thing to finish with Zola. And now I just look forward to every Saturday. I'll run the odd half marathon. Mm-hmm. If you really, really twisted my arm, you might be able to get me. If you said to me, let's go to Paris and run Paris marathon, maybe, you know, but otherwise I'm going to do the odd half marathon. I'm going to do my parkrun every Saturday, and I run almost every morning on my own, and I love that time. I love, you know, listening, watching the seasons change. I'm always the first one in our neighborhood to hear the first peep my fro, you know, the red chested
yes.
cuckoo. There you are, I've just done it for you.
Bruce,
I'm always the first one. They've just started. We heard one in the first week of October. Yeah.
What keeps you in? Are you out every single day? Or are there days where you just think, like some of us, it's a bit cold. It's a bit cold. You know, we find every excuse. Some of us.
No, that's cold. Cold is not an excuse. So I'm pretty much, you know, if you took a 2-week spell, there would be one day when I missed. That would be because of work or something like that. I know I'm commentating on the Cape Town Marathon on the weekend.
Okay.
And I know my plane flight is statistically organized the day before that I won't be able to run that day because I've got a very early plane flight down to Cape Town.
Yes.
But, yeah, I'm out most of the time. It's my discipline. It's my structure. It puts structure in my life.
Really?
It puts you know, there's a sort of a feeling when you've had a run in the early morning.
Mm-hmm.
No matter what else goes wrong today, no matter what goes wrong today, I at least got that part right. So I quite like that. And then I've this is not a good advert for running, but I've recently had a knee replacement operation.
Sure.
So I missed about 2 months. 2.5 months when I simply couldn't run because, you know, the operation was recovering from the operation. I volunteered at parkrun, and I just got more and more frustrated. So as soon as I could, I started running, which was, my surgeon will probably kill me if he's listening to this program.
and you having had the knee surgery and being away for 2 months, I'm sure the things about running and the things about yourself that you discovered that running does for you. And because you were not running, you were feeling all sorts of things. What were those things that you were feeling when you were not running?
I've discovered I'm a very grumpy person. very grumpy. My family stayed away from me. And then they started saying, well, get on the stationary bike
or go something.
And walk. You can walk. Go and walk, yeah. I have to, you know, I have to move. That's one of the things. And it's a wonderfully creative time. I do a lot of writing, and I wrote a book on how to run your first Comrades, which absolutely shocked me because I don't know what a bestseller is in South Africa, but I sold 9,000 and I'm still selling, so that must be quite good. by South African standards. I'm not going to make J.K. Rowling's panic. You know, with Harry Potter, I think she sold half of 500 million copies. But I've got mine. And so I'm starting a second book because I've become emboldened, you know, by the first one.
Mm.
And I enjoy writing. And a lot of my ideas I get while I'm running. Because I think it's that fresh blood to the head, you're breathing, you get creative. And so quite often I've had to do a U-turn, come back to my house, ring the doorbell and shout at somebody, write this down. To write it on a scrap of paper in case I forget by the time I finish the run.
And when you're out there, you've just spoken to me about Pete Mafro, the bird, and you're the first person to hear it.
In the neighborhood, always.
Yeah. How has our landscape changed? We speak about climate change. We speak about all sorts of things. Some of us every now and then remember, I don't see that plant anymore. How has our landscape changed?
Oh, I don't know. And I'm a bit of a skeptic about some of these things. But I think Johannesburg has changed in many ways for the better. It's become, and I stand open to correction, but one of the world's largest artificial forests.
Yes, it is, definitely.
So many trees. Yeah. So the original Johannesburg, when they discovered gold, was on open savanna and grasslands.
Mm-hmm.
It's now a forest. And so there's some beautiful creatures that have come, you know, particularly the birds. I can remember as a youngster, there were no hardy-dars. I don't remember hardy-dars.
Mm.
Now they drive you mad in the early morning.
It's
called hardy-dars, grey go-away birds, the grey lurie. I don't remember them. Yeah, so it's a different environment. To me, it's pretty much the same. I mean, I can hear rumbling outside my window as I talk to you. I can hear rumbling, the first proper thunderstorm of a Johannesburg summer.
Yes.
And so that, by the way, if I record a proper Johannesburg thunderstorm with the lightning and the black sky and the hail, and I send that to my friends who've emigrated, the Scatterlings of Africa. If I send it to the Scatterlings of Africa, they feel suicidal when they hear it. Because that's my one friend who's a professor of law at Toronto University, Dave Dysenhaus. He said that is the one thing he misses so desperately is a high-felt thunderstorm.
It's so unique to the high-felt.
Yeah.
What do you run to? Is it, I mean, are you in your thoughts primarily or are you listening to stuff?
No, I never. I listen to the sounds of nature around me. You know, Johannesburg, as much as I praise it and I love this city, I'm a Joburg nut.
Mm.
I'm going nowhere. I'm staying here. I love it. But it's also, as you hinted, it can be dangerous. Mm. So you need to have all your senses with you. And I'm not necessarily talking about being attacked. I'm talking about a car that's out of control, a dog that's got out of its gate and is running at you to bite you. So I never listen to music when I'm running, never. The only place for me that music has a role is when you're running on the treadmill in the gym, because it's so boring you need music. But I listen to everything around me, you know, the sounds, as you can hear, the bird sounds, the dawn starting, those kinds of things to me. And I think in many ways the different seasons, and I'm going to wax lyrical, but the earth, the city, it talks to you in different tones at different in different times of the year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a winter voice, there's a summer voice, I love autumn in South Africa. I mean, in Johannesburg, I absolutely love autumn. You know, what season of mist and mellow fruitfulness, wasn't that Keats or something? I've probably messed up that quote, but anyway. I listen to those things, you know, and now I'm going to, you know, sound like I'm some kind of a guru or something, but I like to sort of blend in with my surroundings and enjoy it. It's not all fun and games. I have been mugged.
Okay.
You know, I've been held up at gunpoint.
Wow.
And had my watch stolen and had my shoes ripped off my feet.
Wow.
Which was really interesting because they had done about 800 Ks. The pair that got stolen from me had done about 800 kilometers, and they smelt of Gorgonzola cheese. So they weren't a great thing to steal.
So how many Ks do you do a day?
I try to. Okay, so forget about my knee operation, but I try to do about 10 a day.
What?
Eight to 10 a day, and then on the weekend a slightly longer one.
Hmm.
And then my kind of race of the week is a park run. Generally, if I get to a park run, I'll try and go the best that I can. I'll try and do the best that I can, which is increasingly getting slower. But I'm in a nice age group. So park run is divided into age groups. If you do feel competitive, if you don't, it doesn't matter at all. But I start running and I look around for all the graying, bald-headed guys around me. I think, okay, that guy's in my age group. I'll try and beat him. And nowadays I'm in a lacquer age group because most of my opposition is dead. So I've only got a few guys to beat.
You know, I'm listening to you, and it clearly, I mean, you get a lot of joy out of running, or as you said, you know, moving. Is there anything else that comes close for you?
The Springboks winning the World Cup, because I am their most passionate supporter. They don't know. And as I said earlier, I was a passionate scrum half, a number nine. So I'm shouting at the scrum half on the, you know, I'm talking to the world's best scrum half like a pup. I'm shouting at him what to do, and I always laugh. You know, there's the best in the world, and I play for my under 15 B team at school, and I'm telling him what to do. So I'm passionate about, I'm also a lot of people don't know I'm an archaeologist. I read archaeology at Wits University, and I worked in the archaeology department with the world's greatest genius on Bushman's Tarn rock art, Professor David Lewis Williams. Mm-hmm. And so I connect with that quite a lot, particularly as runners, because we are here in the cradle of humankind. Mm. And our ancestors, who were the hunter-gatherers, the original hunter-gatherers, mm-hmm. walked across the savannas of Africa and their remains, I mean, of Southern Africa, and their remains in all those dolomite caves in places like Sterkfontein and the cradle of humankind. I mean, they were the best runners on the planet. A lot of people think, well, the cheetah is faster. Yes, a cheetah is faster. And there's a lot of animals that are far, far stronger, but no one can run as long or as with as much tactical nous as an early primate human being in hominid in the valley, you know, in the mm-hmm. cradle of humankind. Mm-hmm. We were the greatest hunters of all. Hunter-gatherers, we ran animals to exhaustion. We can sweat, which is a very unusual mm-hmm. thing, and we can cool down and we can work as a team. And we would hunt animals and kill them and survive because of that. And that's because we're runners. It's just that we've forgotten to do that.
So would you say it's definitely in the genes? I mean, when you look at, when I see the Kenyans, for instance, run, and I think you can train, but boy, there's something in their genes. Oh, am I wrong?
Yeah, there is a genetic factor that we can all run. But I mean, yes, obviously there's a genetic factor, and there seems to be that those East Africans, I'm including Ethiopians, mm. the Tanzanians, the Ugandans, they come from millions of years of living at high altitude in the Rift Valley. Mm. And stretching up from here, from basically Sterkfontein up through the Great Lakes and through the Rift Valley is where human beings were born. Mm. And in the higher lands of the Rift Valley, the highlands, the high altitude, you get magnificent runners. Mm. As we know, all the Kenyans, as I said, the Ethiopians, but we're not bad too. Huh? Mm. We're not half bad. People forget that we have a marathon, an Olympic marathon champion, mm. Jasad Togwani, mm. who won in Atlanta in 1996 against the best in the world. So, you know, we do pretty well, and we're also quite at comrades. We're doing very well.
Yeah.
You know, South Africa is also a place with great runners. And then, of course, we have another genetic stream, and that is those really, really big guys who get into the rugby team.
Yes.
You know, where does Oxenchair come from? I don't know. You know, where does Eben Etzebeth come from? For one thing's for sure, they're not going to make great comments on it. But you try and stop Ox in front of the try line. And he's got the ball tucked under his arm.
Bruce,
if I was standing next to you, I'd shout at you, "Yours, Pamela."
People are listening, and they will kill me if I don't ask you the question. How much does diet contribute to, you know, what you can do running, wherever you're running, whatever the altitude.
Yeah, how much does diet Yeah, so I'm afraid to say, you know, I look at some people and I can see they're trying so hard. They're trying so hard to lose weight, and my heart bleeds for them. And there's a famous quote from Tim Noakes, which I think it's Tim Noakes, and he's correct. No amount of exercise can outdo a bad diet.
Yep.
So as much as I'm an exercise nut and I love my running, if I couldn't run, I would cycle. If I couldn't cycle, I would swim. But as much as I love those things, I understand that if the first step is to correct your diet. You have to. And unfortunately, we are loaded with junk food and stuff like that. You have to go back and imagine what our ancestors, an early hominid in the Rift Valley or in Sterkfontein around this, in that area, in the cradle of humankind, what did they eat? You know, what did they eat? They had no cancers. They had no coronary heart disease. They were not overweight. They died because they fell and broke their leg and then they got septicemia and they died. That's why they died. You know, they died because they lost their teeth or something like that. They didn't die of the modern diseases that we die of because they ate the simplest things. They ate the simplest fruits and berries and maybe some roots. And they ate the animals they hunted. You know, you literally have to start thinking about that and then say to yourself, do I really need that Chelsea bun? Do I really need, and it stays hard, do I really need that? There was no ice cream when they were around. I know it's bleak, and I'm always one who will allow myself a treat, but it's a treat. And as soon as I can, I'm back on the program. So if you ask me now, what did I have for supper? I had chicken, cauliflower mash, some avocado, and a salad.
So
boring. And I'll have a couple of glasses of red wine.
So is it as Tim Noakes says, protein? No longer the carbs when running. It's protein that sustains you more.
No, it's not so much that. Remember, the diet is in fad. I mean, but you'll hear that it's called a fad diet, but it's actually not. It's low carbohydrate. That's the thing. Not no carbohydrate. Of course, there's some carbohydrate, but it's low carbohydrate. So lower the amount that you eat, you know, and then have more protein, fat, and very simple fruits. That's, you know, unfortunately, that huge, great, big, luscious, whatever it is, peach, has been, you know, genetically modified and grown to be like that. Yeah. It's not what our hunter-gatherer ancestors would have done.
Yeah.
They would have found a small bitter thing, which they chewed and got some vitamin C and a little bit of sweetness from it or whatever, or some berries on a tree or on a bush. But that's it. And people say it's boring. It's not boring. I find it so easy to stick to. But there again, I'm also not one of those fanatics. If I came to your place and you have made a huge pasta for dinner, I'm not going to be one of those painful people who says, oh, didn't they? People tell you that I don't. You know, I'll eat your pasta and I'll absolutely enjoy it. And the next morning I'll be back on my program. You know, that's the difference.
So you've obviously interacted a lot with those people who come to the park run and, you know, as you said, there are people like myself who would be the very last, very, very last walking and trying to get by. I mean,
it
must be quite a feeling watching those people come out every single Saturday. And what do you get from them? What do they say, you know, this park run does for them?
Well, I can get quite tearful because occasionally I have a person who will walk up to me, a stranger, and just hug me and say, thank you for parkrun, you changed my life. And that makes all of it worthwhile. Unfortunately, I was winning comrades in the years when there was no prize money, but I'm not bitter. But there was no prize money. You know, if you win now, you get 800,000 rand. But I'm not bitter. And if you break the record, you get another 500,000. I did that five times.
Sure.
So I'm not a but you cannot be. There is no cash wealth that can even remotely come close to a stranger hugging you and saying thank you for what you've done to change my life for the better. We get a lot of that. When I say we, it's our team that have got parkrun going around the country, and that is just too fabulous. And when I climb out of my car at a parkrun and I walk towards people. I just see, it's a corny adjective, but if I had to use one adjective to describe parkrun, it's happy. People are happy when they're there. And, you know, and it's just, yeah, it is a simply magical thing. It's wonderful. They're all there together to run, to walk, to whatever, to volunteer on a Saturday morning. And then afterwards go off for coffee and breakfast together or do whatever. You know, it's a hugely social bonding event. Well, massive event, because we've got more than 200 now in South Africa.
You know, you were saying earlier that you couldn't play the other sports. You were passionate, but you were not great. Then, you know, running kind of sort of happened. Did you know, would you know immediately if you're a runner, if you're a talented runner? Did it feel like, was it easy and natural for you?
Yeah, it did come quite easily to me. And from a very early age, I started to win it. And it's not about winning, but I did. I used to just find that I was winning. And in this book that I'm writing now, I'm writing about one of the moments that I had when I realized that I was quite good. And that was that a whole lot of us guys were on the beach and we started running across the sand, running towards a whole lot of seagulls in the distance. Mm. And I just got faster and faster and faster and faster. Mm. And I was miles ahead of my mates by the time I got to the seagulls, which then attacked me. But the point was that afterwards I thought, wow, that was fantastic. You know, my feet splashing through the seawater on the edge of the sand and breathing in all that ozone. And I just thought, no, I'm meant to do this. Hmm. And then when I had done quite well in my running career, I wanted to get a proper job because I was earning no money. Mm. And I sat with my mother and my father and I said, you know, I've done quite well in my running. I think I'd won one comrade. Mm. And I said, but now it's time that I get a proper job because my mates are all making money and stuff. And my mother just looked at me and she said, no, you have to keep running. And she spoke the most beautiful English. She was an English teacher. Mm. And she said to me, you are uncommonly good at long distance running. Wow. You need to keep doing it.
Wow.
Yeah. And I mean, uncommonly good. That's lovely English.
Yeah. And that must have stayed with you because, as you said, you didn't get the prize money. You didn't get the prize money. But you kept going.
I'm going to toy outside Comrade's house in Pietermaritzburg with a whole bunch of the older guys for retrospective prize money. Don't worry.
I'll be right there with you. But I get the feeling that it was all worth it, was it?
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, as I said, I'm rich. Mm. I'm far richer than somebody knows with the life that I have. I've got a roof over my head. I've got food. I've got great friends. Mm. I've got parkrun and I've got my health, you know, apart from my gammy knee, but my knee's just about better. Hmm. And, I think, no, I wouldn't change too much. If I was going to change one thing, I would have been a little bit bolder in 1980. Because in 1980, I came second to Alan Robb, and he beat me by a minute, and I should have beaten him. So that, I sometimes think about it, but not much. If that's your failure, that you once came second when you should have come first, that's not too bad.
Oh, boy. Yeah. No, that's going to stay with you. It sounds to me like it's going to stay with you. Bruce,
No, it stayed with my mother. My mother, she absolutely was the strictest. I miss her every day, but she was the strictest person, but obviously loved her children, myself and my sister. But she always used to ask me why I didn't win 10 comrades. And I used to say to her, you know, Mom, 9's not bad. You know, it's quite hard to get 9. You know, you come and look at the current lot. They're struggling to get 2. So 9's not bad. And then she'd say, yes, sir. And then she would sometimes phone me out of the blue and she would say, do you think if you'd tried a bit harder in 1980? I said, Mom. So, it haunted her more than me.
And so what is that finish line moment like? Is it the same every year?
Oh. No, it's not because it depends how desperately close it is. But I had a couple of comrades when I won by quite a long margin.
Yeah.
And now I'm trying to think. 1988, I had a 12-minute lead, which in comrades is a massive lead. Yeah. To be, so and I had, when I had about 1 kilometer to go, I kind of knew I'm going to win. And what I did with then, which was very fortunate, and I tell comrades runners to do it when they know they're going to make it. I say, freeze the moment.
Mm.
Try and remember as much of it as you can. So I froze the moment that I knew I was going to win. that I was very tired, my legs were very sore, I was losing a toenail, the sweat from my forehead was going into my eyes, making it sting. But there was a crowd on either side of me screaming, you know, going mad. There's the TV truck, and there's the finish line, and you're going to win. And so whenever I feel so lonely or upset or a bit disappointed with myself, I can go back to 1988 and I can defrost it. But if I could do it right now, well, I'm doing it now while I talk to you. I can see myself there, and you're going to win the Comrades, which is one of the world's great races. So I can go back there and get quite emotional and think, wow, you did, you know. And then the tape in my day was always made of hard plastic.
Yeah.
So it used to burst. When you hit the tape at the end, it would go bang.
Yes.
And it was the most incredible sound. And then you start crying. Oh, my goodness, I'm just one comment. Yeah.
But after nine times, I mean, it must be quite something, because that journey too, it's long. I mean, when we watch, we get exhausted just watching you. So much must be going through your mind when you're on that road.
Yeah, look, it's a very intense day. I compare it because I went to university and I wrote some quite long exams. I compare it to writing a very intense exam for a very long time. Because you people think you take your mind off, you know, and you recite poetry backwards or something. You don't. You have to focus exactly what's happening. Okay, here comes the hill. Okay, you're breathing hard because it's a hill. Don't worry. What's the guy next to you? He's breathing really hard. He's going to let go just now. Remember to get a drink. There's the 20 Ks to go marker. You know, you're like that the whole way. Why? Okay, change. You're cramping. Just change your running style a little bit. Change your running. So, you know, it's that kind of concentration the whole way. So that at the end, I always used to look quite doff is the best expression, because I would be drained. I'd be staring at my feet thinking, wow, what happened today? You know, it was a long day.
When, you know, you said earlier that, for instance, the toenail was going off and all of that. Can you feel anything at that point? I mean, is the body feeling the pain of the toenail, yourself losing the toenail, or are you completely numb? Everything is painful equally and you don't quite feel it. You'll only feel it tomorrow or later on.
No. As I said, I had some good ones where I was absolutely flying at the end, running really quickly at the end. I mean, you're talking about 3 minutes, 10 seconds, 3 minutes, 15 seconds a kilometer. But then I also had some when I was dying. And when you die, it's more focusing on keeping going.
Mm-hmm.
I used to, towards the end, sometimes battle with cramps in my quads, trying to find a different way to put your feet down on the ground so they don't hurt. Hoping that that toenail will come off, because if it comes off, then it's not going to be sore anymore.
Sure.
And then just focusing on overcoming exhaustion, remembering to drink. It's not a great place to be, but I can promise you 1 kilometer to go in the front of the Comrades with the 12-minute lead, there's no amount of money you can pay for that. That is the greatest thing. And then with Comrades, what also happens is a tradition that the leading man and the woman, as they get to the entrance of the stadium, they're given a baton that they carry.
Mm-hmm.
See, and this baton is in black and gold. It's the colors of the Comrades Marathon. And inside the baton, so it's like a relay baton, as you see in a relay race. Mm-hmm. Inside the baton is a letter, rolled up letter from the mayor of the city that you left. So let's say the mayor of Durban to the mayor of the city that you're arriving in, the mayor of Pietermaritzburg.
Yeah.
And when you finish, they take that baton out.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they take that letter out and they read it. But there isn't, when you get that baton, there isn't a single Comrades runner. I don't know what it does. As you get it, it pulls your arm up into the air.
Sure.
The Comrades runners always, their arm goes straight up into the sky.
Wow.
And they hold that baton up high. It's like,
It's like the Olympic flame. I've seen it.
Like Excalibur coming out of the lake. Okay, so you got this thing and you hold it up, and this is going to sound a bit like quaint or whatever, but I now realize when I think back on it and I look at the current winners with the baton, it is for you and you carry it, but it's also a door knocker. And as the runner runs around the final lap, they kind of, with their running rhythm, they're kind of going knock, 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 knock. And what they're saying is, okay, to all of you spectators who are here in the stadium, 20,000 of you or whatever, and to all of you millions watching on television, I'm going to win. I'm the winner. But I'm knocking on the door. I've opened the door, and behind me are going to come the most incredible, the bravest, toughest, most amazing human beings you have ever seen who did not choose their parents correctly and are going to they're going to battle all day long to get to the finish and stand by to be absolutely awestruck and gobsmacked and amazed, because for the rest of the day, these people are going to struggle in and finish. And some of them, as I finish, are going through halfway.
Sure.
It's quite a staggering thought. They are at halfway. They started in the dark in Durban, and they will finish in the dark in Pietermaritzburg. Sure. They'll be out there for a whole day. And I say those are the true comrades. You know, that is unbelievable, the courage there. But they keep going all day. They lose all their toenails. Comrades, as you can see, is a lot of fun.
And where do you keep all your medals? And where are all those letters?
No, they take the letter from me. And they take the letter. Don't worry, comrades gives you nothing. They take the letter away. They take the baton back to see. No, they give you a gold medal. Now, I've kept the gold medals for winning, but you know you lose quite a lot of stuff. But no, my comrades' medals I wouldn't lose. I've got them in a safe place.
Yeah, tell us where so that we can come and loot your house.
you have to pull my toenails out one at a time with red hot fires to try and steal, because I know what went into each of them. Yeah, you know, it's quite funny.
Absolutely.
If you've got nine wins, if you've got nine wins or whatever, how many wins you? People say, which is your favorite one? I always say, well, speak to a mother who has nine children. Yeah. Which is her favorite child? The naughty one, the pretty one, the good one, the clever one, the one who always makes her laugh? You know, which I've got. So those are my nine. There's the naughty one. Sure, 1982. There's a great one. You know, there's a fabulous one, 1988. You know, so I can look back at all of them like that. Yeah.
Are they in your will?
Yeah, I don't know what you do. What do you do with them?
I don't know.
You can melt them down. They're made of gold, but you could melt them down for gold. But you can't really sell a comrades.
But
you sell a comrades.
You have thought about who's going to inherit them, have you not?
Yeah, I don't know. I think, as with all things, comrades takes everything back from you. So they take the winners back and they take the mayor's letter. And in the end, I think you end up donating your medals back to the Comrades Museum. That's what Wally Hayward did. Wally Hayward's one of the greats.
Yeah.
Who won five times but finished Comrades when he was 80.
Yeah.
All his medals are back in the Comrades Museum.
Wow.
Yeah.
Sure. Bruce Fordyce, what a pleasure. What a pleasure.
Okay, thank you.
What a wonderful conversation. Really appreciate you making time for us. Thank you, thank you.
It's always a pleasure to talk about my two favorite things. Comrades Marathon and Parkrun. And aren't they polar opposites? The one is 90 kilometers, really tough and grueling.
Yeah.
And the other one is 5 kilometers, such fun and such a great way to start a weekend. You know, so they're two polar opposites, and yet somehow I found them both. And the only common denominator is they both have running in them.
What a pleasure. Thank you. And
thanks so much.
Thank you. Really appreciate it. Bruce Fordyce, ladies
so
and
much.
Gentlemen.
Okay.
All right, that brings us to the end of the show for tonight. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.